You're listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson, exploring humanity's greatest mystery, awakening through awareness. Hello, greetings and welcome. Angus here, season 2, episode 3. So last week, Pete and I pulled on our long wellies as we went wading into slightly deeper and perhaps maybe even murkier spiritual waters. We looked at formal versus informal practice, and we looked at the somewhat triggering topic of spiritual bypassing. And I thank you for all the comments and observations that came in from that particular inquiry. This week, well, I love this conversation. It feels a little like Pete and I are getting into a groove now. And I'm just so excited for where these conversations are going. This week, we looked at stories, the value of stories, how we tell stories, how we awaken to the fact that we are telling ourselves stories. And we also looked at the phenomenon, if you like, of wanting to be liked, wanting to be popular. So sit yourself back, put your feet up, and listen in to my conversation with best-selling author Peter Russell. So welcome, Pete. Welcome back. Thank you for showing up once again. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Nice to be with you again. Looking forward to this, wherever we go.
Yes, exactly. It's an what's the word? Uncharted territory in a map that's not yet written. But there are a couple of things that I would love for us to dip into that we've sort of touched upon before. And the first one really is under the heading of stories. And, you know, we sometimes talk about old stories and how we're affected by stories and how we, I suppose there's questions that often come up for my students around why do we have stories? How do we keep them alive? What purpose do they serve? And of course, the most important, I suppose most important question, how do we end those stories? So I wondered if you got some thoughts you could slowly tease out on some of those topics.
Yes. Well, in fact, stories is a banner which covers a lot of different things that go on in our mind. I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, stories of, you know, what happened in the past, or rather our interpretation of what happened in our past. I think the thing about our stories is they're generally interpretations of what happened, or interpretations of what we want to happen, expectations. We have stories about how things are going to be in the future. You know, I have a story about how a certain relationship should go or should not go, whatever it is. So in that sense, we're talking about more than just historical stories. We're talking about basically, a lot of the things we tell ourselves, the story we tell ourselves, even about the present, what is going on. You know, we tell ourselves stories the whole time. You know, even things like, I'm stuck in a traffic jam. This isn't good for me. I'm going to be late. And we get caught in a story about what is going to happen when we get there, because we're going to miss something or someone's going to be upset at us. So we spend a lot of our time in one way or another telling ourselves stories, and some of them are fine, but a lot of them get in our way, I think, in several ways. One, they're actually just taking up our attention. You know, stuck in the traffic jam. So there I am, stuck in a traffic jam, and I could be saying, the story could be, hey, this is wonderful. This is what I've been looking forward to all day long. I've got nothing to do, no other drivers to avoid, no pedestrians walking out in front of me. I can sit back, I can even close my eyes and relax. The person who's telling themselves a story about how they're going to be late and what's going to happen and what do they do and what do I say and all this stuff, you're increasing tension in yourself, making yourself more stressed. So what's in that case, so that the stress from the traffic jam doesn't come from sitting in a car that's not moving. That's the most unstressful way we can be in a car. The stress comes from what we're telling ourselves. And I think that's true of a lot of our stress. We tell ourselves stories that basically have anxiety or something in them, some form of fear or concern. And that just, they stop us being in the present, very, very simply. You know, if our attention is in some story about what's going on, what has happened or will happen, we're taking ourselves out of the experience of the present moment. So I think that's one of the principal things about stories. And also, I think they lead us often to behave in ways which aren't so helpful for ourselves or others, because in a certain story, if I had, well, here's one I just had very recently. I have a story about a friend, because the way he lives his life is not the way I would live my life.
Right.
Which is, you know, absolutely fine. But I then find myself getting judgmental about him. You know, mm-hmm. what's wrong with him? He's not, you know, I get into all these stories about who he is and what he's doing. And then, I mean, that's bad enough. But then I find myself responding to him in a certain way. Like, I was traveling with him a while back, and he's someone who lives by his GPS, even on roads he knows well. I hope he's not listening to this.
Right, no names, Pete.
He'll know who it is if he listens. Right. But so what I then do is I make little snide remarks. Or just little remarks like, oh, come on, you don't need your GPS to get home. Don't you know your way home? It's like, you know, and then, well, I just keep quiet. That's my story. That's the way he lives. He likes to do that. Fine. But what happens is it starts coming out and it starts spoiling, well, you know, the relationship. It puts a thorn in the relationship. And so that's something where I have to watch those stories that I just say, okay, and keep it to myself in these situations, not the whole time, but just, yeah, because it gets in the way of things. It can actually begin to spoil relationships. And I'm sure when I said that, he felt slightly attacked, slightly hurt, and yeah.
Did he respond adversely when you said that? Did he sort of take umbrage at it?
Well, I don't know. He just said something about, well, you know, I like to do it or something, or I feel safer or something. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, but that's just, you know, an example.
Yes, absolutely. No, I, listening to you, I'm struck by, you know, in a sense, stories are what we live by. Everything is really a story, would be my take on it. And our interpretations, as you say, you know, past and future, we live almost, perhaps sometimes, trapped in that story without seeing reality as it is.
Yes.
So I think the value of stories is that we recognize that it's not just the obvious stories, such as the fine examples you've just given. It's that almost everything is storyboarded in our minds, and we don't, well, as you and I know, we then miss the bliss, the joy, the peace of being empty of those stories.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, you could say the essence of, you know, a lot of meditation techniques is how do we step out of our stories and just come back to whatever you want to call it, our natural being, and which is where, you know, we feel easier. And it's because I think that's our natural state. And then the stories, as I say, generally, they create anxiety. They'll also create excitement.
Yes.
You know, we get all, you know, God, I'm going to this concert tomorrow. I haven't seen this band for 10 years. This is going to be amazing.
Right.
I'm going with so-and-so who I really like, and this is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
And again, we, you know, it's a story which is, you know, there's truth to it. It may well be that case, but while we're wrapped up in that, again, we're losing that quiet inner joy that is, in a sense, I think what we're all looking for deep inside. Mm. Yeah. So I think, I mean,
well, that, to that last point, if I can just interrupt, is it not true that, of course, we are all ultimately looking for that freedom from the story and the inner joy that you describe? But my experience of humanity thus far, and certainly this was true of me up to age 29, 30 odd, I didn't know I was in a story.
Yes.
That's the waking up. You know, one could almost say awakening, enlightenment, I don't like that word,
is just,
no, horrible word, but you get the gist. Awakening is really recognizing that we've storied the whole of our experience and got lost in it.
Right. And I would take it just one little turn further and say we're waking up from the stories.
Yes.
Because our stories are, in a sense, the dream. A lot of teachers say, you know, oh, we live in a dream. We live in an illusion. Mm. And I think people misinterpret that to say, you know, this tree outside is an illusion. Mm. I mean, for me, my experience is very, very, very real. But the dream world we go into is the stories I'm telling myself. That's the dream world. And so the waking up is waking up. I think, first of all, what your point is, waking up to the fact we have a lot of stories going on.
Yes.
And then that's the first step. And then we have a choice. You know, some stories are helpful. They're valuable stories. We do need to think, explore these things. And other stories are actually not helpful. And then we have a choice of which stories do we allow to be there and which do we choose not to follow. And that, and then that's the second sense of waking up. We're not, if I'm not following that particular dream in my mind anymore, then I am more awake to this moment.
Yes, yes, that leads.
And to the experience of this moment, not the story of this moment, the experience of this moment.
Yes, the raw, I sometimes call that the raw experience, the unfiltered experience.
Yeah. And so when I, you know, I catch myself time and again caught in something, it's just like, and when it stops, it's like, ah, there's the sound of a bird or the refrigerator or there's that itch in my knee again. They've all been there, but my attention has been in the story. My attention is there. And so when we stop the story or pause it, our attention is free to be more here.
I love it. And to your last but one point, I just want to pick up on that because I think there's some mileage to explore. I would hold it to be true in my experience that, as you indicated, there are stories that are of great value to us that are very useful. You know, the hero's journey to be archetypal about it, or, you know, frankly, Star Wars. These are popular myths, popular modern myths that are pointing to something deeper and a process and a direction, a journey within us. So I wouldn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
No,
there is value and beauty in stories, but what we're really discerning is the lostness in the unconscious storyboarding.
Right, exactly.
Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And when I recognize a story, I think there's two questions I think we can pose to any story. Is the first question is, how does this story serve me?
Hmm.
Because a story is there for some reason. It's serving me in some way or another. If it wasn't helping me or serving me, I wouldn't be telling myself the story. So, you know, in that case of the GPS, you know, that serves me because it makes me feel a little better, a little superior, whatever it is. So, you know, it does serve me. And maybe that serving is, you know, an honorable word. But a story is there for a reason. It is serving you in some way. And then the second question is, and how does that story hinder me? What does it stop me seeing? You know, as if I'm being judgmental about someone in a story, you know, it stops me seeing who they are. I'm just seeing them through the lens of my interpretation of them. So that's the side. And then, you know, if you see that what it stops you seeing, how it hinders you, is actually more of a handicap than the reason it's there, then that gives you the freedom to let go. So it isn't just saying, well, here's a story, I've got to let go of it. But you can actually say, yes, it's there for a reason. So it gives it some validation. You're not fighting the story and saying it's no good. You're saying, yes, I can see why this story is here. There's a reason for it.
Right.
And the cost of it is actually more than I want.
Right.
And that gives you the, if you like, the freedom or motivation to let it go.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. And I'm smiling, grinning inanely at you because I do. It's so interesting, Pete. I mean, as I said last week, we've known each other for years. But one of the things that always intrigues me is you and I actually have very similar models in many respects, but we come at it interestingly from quite different perspectives. So when you're talking about, in a sense, what story what purpose does it serve? I see that through the therapeutic model of nonviolent communication, which right. would be called the need. What's the need behind Mr. GPS? Yeah. Ah, he likes to feel safe. Or, you know, what's the need? What does this serve? And then that frees me from the judgment of. Do you get my gist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting to see how one can land at the same place of finding the value in a story from very different perspectives, but they land in the same place. Yeah. I'm also reminded of Freud, who famously said, again, from a therapeutic point of view, he said, all of my patients seem to be suffering from memories and stories. And that's basically the therapeutic process.
Yes.
Yeah. Waking up to the stories that are being relived, re-traumatizing stories and so on, and then learning to reevaluate, reassess, perhaps integrate, make sense of, and then let go.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think another way is you mentioned suffering, and my mind immediately goes to Buddha and his Four Noble Truths.
Yeah.
And basically, to put them very, very simply, we all suffer, not in the sense of necessary pain, but we all mentally, you know, feel discontent. The reason is because we cling to our, we could say stories, but, you know, how things should be, should not be, our expectations, our judgments, whatever. It's the clinging to our stories, which is the source of suffering, which seems, you know, it's exactly what you were saying Freud was saying. So it's, you know, it comes from psychoanalytic roots, but yes. from, you know, deep spiritual roots as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a very universal theme we're touching on here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before we leave this topic of stories, I just have to say I'm doubly chortling to myself because I have the opposite friend to your GPS friend. and I am going to name him Jim Hoddle, a very dear friend from back in the day. Jim will turn off any sat-nav he comes into contact with. Moreover, he will never take the same road knowingly twice. If there's a possible alternative, he will take it with the aim of getting lost so he can find himself again. And I love it. As a metaphor, it's one of the many reasons why I absolutely adore him. He just likes to get lost to then discover how to be found.
You know? Yes, yes.
But I think we should get these two guys together.
Yes. I like your friend a lot. I have some of that in me.
Yes. I recognize that.
I refuse to use GPS unless it's really, really important.
Right.
It's necessary. But no. I'm the same. I love to explore. The other day I went out, okay, which roads haven't I been down in the countryside around here? To say, where do they lead? Well, anyway.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Now let's just take a breath. And there's another question that I definitely want us to go into in a moment. I just feel just a breath to take some space. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay.
Letting go of our stories about stories.
Exactly. Exactly. I like it. So this one, Pete, is it's an interesting one, and I know it's something you're, I believe it's something you're happy to share about and talk about, which is great. And it's this topic of being liked. Now, being liked, just as a little intro to this, of course, I think is something that pretty much every human being, unless they've got serious psychological issues, every human being wants to be liked. But I wondered if you could just talk a little bit around the subject of, you know, what is this mechanism and how does it play out in you, in others, in people generally, and what can we do about it? You know, this universal desire to be popular, to be maybe even famous, maybe that's an extension of it, but certainly to be liked. Any thoughts on that, Pete?
Oh, several. I'm sure you have some as well.
I do.
You wouldn't be talking about
exactly.
it otherwise. Okay. Well, I mean, to go back to, I think, its roots, we are social creatures. We're tribal creatures. You know, if you go back, I always like to go back to our sort of evolutionary roots, evolutionary biology. You know, we live together in small groups, who knows, you know, 30, 50 people, whatever, in small villages. You wanted to be part of the tribe. If you were, if you were ostracized, that could mean death. Mm. You know, you needed the support of the community. So I think we have this deep, deep thing to want to belong. We want to belong to our tribe, and we want, being liked means we're included in the tribe. So not being liked has that deep, deep unconscious thing of being excommunicated, being thrown out of the tribe. So I think that's where its roots come from. Mm. And so in that sense, it's in all of us. It's in all of us.
Yeah.
To some people, doesn't manifest that much at all. They don't care. But I think it's deep in there. They don't care, and they say what the hell they think. And if people don't like them, who the fuck cares? Mm-hmm. Other people, it just runs their whole life. It's like everything they're doing is like, okay, monitoring what they say to make sure the person approves, you know, to be approved or to be liked. So it runs a whole range of how it manifests. But I think deep in there, it's in us all. So it's not something to be despised or got rid of. It's how do we live with how that manifests in our life? Yeah. And this came up for me in another conversation we had. What triggered this was I just noticed a while back, I don't like people who don't like me. And it was a shock. Mm-hmm. It was one of those little awakening shocks that, you know, okay, people may not like me for some reason or another, whatever it is. But then I notice I'm not so open to them in quite the same way as I would be to someone who liked me. And so that was surprising. I didn't realize that was going on, that I form a slight, maybe there's a slight judgment against them. I'm not sure what it is quite, but I just noticed that I rejected them slightly because they didn't like me. And so that I just found interesting, and that started me off on a whole, you know, exploration of what this is all about here. So yeah, I see it definitely.
Where did that go? Sorry, where did that, when you went into that, I'm curious, was there something tangible, sort of insights that you can share, or something do you notice that you maybe didn't like about yourself, or what was coming up when you managed to go undercover, so to speak?
Undercover with myself, under the covers. Yes, I like that. Firstly, there was this sense of a little surprise because I hadn't really considered that. It was like a slight shock. Oh, that goes on. Just bringing it to awareness, seeing that goes on. And then I think there was somewhat self-judgment. You know, that's not very nice of me. It's not very good of me. That's, you know, I then get into that's a weakness I have, whatever it is, I shouldn't be doing that. But not strongly. I think the main thing was just this acknowledgement. Oh, this goes on. This goes on. And then what comes from that, I think, is the motivation to catch myself when I start noticing that, to catch myself. Because when it goes on unconsciously, that's when we're trapped by it. And I think that's what I think, you know, many psychologists, I know Jung particularly, would say, you know, what remains deep inside you, what's not expressed, what you don't know, that's what rules you. When you bring it to consciousness, it doesn't rule you so strongly. Yes. I know what Jung said, what you resist persists. What you resist, what you don't let in, is still there. It persists and it's running you.
Was that a Jungian quote?
Yes.
Was it?
Yes.
Interesting. I thought that was
Werner Erhard.
Yes.
Yes. Well, he got it from Jung.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Even if he didn't acknowledge it, but anyway.
Right.
But that's okay.
We don't know where Jung got it from, but yeah. No, that's good to know. I didn't realize Jung had originally sort of put that down.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, we all say things without acknowledging their source the whole time. It's fine. That's the way we work. We take things from other people. We use them. Yeah.
No, I'm loving what you're saying and your very honest share on that. I concur that it's an incredibly uncomfortable feeling that I've had in my role as owner of the studio, you know, owning Battersea Yoga and sort of ostensibly heading up the community, as it were. I remember being, first of all, in denial, and then shocked, and then humbled when a certain character said, "Of course, you're just thriving off all the adoration of, you know, people coming to the studio." And of course, what was happening was this person was actually saying, "I'm not buying it. I don't like you." Essentially, that was actually the covert message, which really was an ouchy moment. And I was forced to sit with that and go, okay, I need to look a little deeper in here. Okay. What are the motivations going on? And of course, they're multifaceted. You know, some are what I would call golden motivations and some are very much shadow motivations. But that one that you're naming, I found to be a particularly uncomfortable shadow motivation, that sort of desire to be liked or popular or admired, you know.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say the last few years have been a very much an unpicking of that process of, okay, I can see that's happening. I need to step away again, you know.
Yeah.
So I thank you for bringing that up. There was something else that you talked about there. That's right. The excommunication. I'm totally in agreement with your estimation of this. What's happening is it's actually very frightening for the individual to be thrown out of the village, because historically, for hundreds of thousands of years, that meant death.
Yeah.
I think it's also worth mentioning, and I often say this to clients in the therapy room, that's even more so the case for females than males. Men generally have a better chance of surviving on the hillside on their own, but for a female, that really is, you know, tantamount to death. So I see that as one of the reasons why the feminine is so much more about community and staying in a group, whereas the men are more able to be the lone wolf, so to speak.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think you're really...
Yeah, definitely. There's one final piece that strikes me from this conversation is the paradox, and there's always a blooming paradox. The need to be liked, one has to be very, very careful with it and conscious of it, because I wonder if you're in agreement with this. I notice that when people really step on the gas and they really strive to be liked, paradoxically, it pushes everyone away.
Yeah.
It's such a paradox. You know, when that really, you know, we've all met them, and again, we're not judging, but when any of us steps into the neediness, it's part of the spectrum of, please love me, like me.
Yeah.
It has this weird pushing away effect.
Yeah, and it makes me cringe. I sort of cringe with it.
Right, right.
I want to withdraw, but also I want to, you know, it's like, who are you? I don't know you. I'm just knowing you. Yes, it's like, you're pushing this surface veil that you would like me to see of who you are.
Yes.
And I feel I'm not connected. Whereas if someone comes and just, you know, is the opposite, you know, and just is how they are without putting that layer on top of it of trying to be liked, then they're much more transparent.
Right.
And I can connect with them much more easily. Definitely.
Yes. And you see, that's important. That last point you made for all of us interested in, whether you call it spiritual development, personal development, character growth, you know, we need to be aware, do we not, of when we're, you know, for example, I will notice, and it's thankfully quite rare-ish these days, but there will be occasional moments where someone somewhere draws me in and I want to be seen or liked or heard. And it's fascinating to watch those motivations within ourselves rising up. And we need to be conscious of those to just put it gently back in the box and breathe.
No, I mean, and I'm not saying at all that I'm immune from this. I see it coming up, you know. I maybe won't say things sometimes. I withhold what I feel or say because of that concern that someone won't like me if I express myself. And so I find myself withholding at times because of that.
So that concludes episode 3 of my conversations with Pete Russell. I do hope you guys are enjoying listening in on these conversations with him as much as I enjoyed having the conversation with him. It is just so refreshing, certainly for me, to hear a teacher of his stature being so utterly down to earth and humble and authentic. It's just a beautiful, beautiful gift. So, yeah, hope you're enjoying them. Next week, we have quite a short episode. Episode 4 is quite a short and punchy little episode, but it's very tender, very sweet. And Pete chooses to share a few thoughts and reflections on the meaning and value and importance of kindness, human kindness. Ah, see you next week. Hope you can join us. Bye for now. You've been listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson. To join my Awaken program, please visit angusfordrobertson.com.